Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Experiments, we know, are the lifeblood of science, and like any other human enterprise, they can be a really long time in the making and they can throw up some unexpected outcomes. Well, over the coming weeks, physicist Dr. Shane Bergen will join us to share some of the experiments that revolutionised science, and we're starting today with those that didn't go to plan but led to great things. Shane, you're very welcome. Lovely to have you back with us. So will you explain to us what role experiments play in science, firstly?
Absolutely. So I work with science students in UCD year in, year out, and we just come to the end of a busy academic year. And one of the questions I ask them at the very beginning of their science degree is, what makes science science? And for some reason, they all think it's about curiosity or creativity or asking questions. And that's true. But it can come as a bit of a shock to them that our colleagues in history or philosophy or politics, all those other places, they ask questions too. So what makes science science? Essentially, it's experiments. So we form hypotheses, which is just an idea about how something in the world might work. And then we have to go and run
based
experiments.
Based in fact, though, your hypotheses will be based in fact. Isn't that how it works?
It's normally building on previous work. Yeah. Exactly. You know, so you would rarely get something that's completely out there. Now, there's nothing to say that you couldn't go and do something out there. But the trustworthiness of science, the essence of science, comes down to data that's collected through experiment. And so you can have all the ideas you want, but it's not science until you can show data that's been collected through an experiment that's verified. And once you, like, the next step in the process is you do your experiment, you say, oh, this shows my idea was right. And you have to convince your peers that they believe that you're right too. And that's when it becomes sort of accepted wisdom. So all the stuff you get in your science textbook in school is all grounded on experiment. But I think learning lots of facts and figures off is essentially not science. The essence of science is doing experiments. And so I think kids in school should be just do science to learn science.
Okay. Well, now we're going to talk about some of those experiments that maybe didn't quite go to plan, but threw up some really interesting results. So tell us about the pigeon poo and the echoes from the dawn of time.
Absolutely. what a random picture to paint, but it's true. So for a long time, we didn't know how the universe started, right? Now, we know today about something called the Big Bang, right? Mm-hmm. Which was that billions of years ago, the universe started, okay? But there was a lot of debate going on, a lot of ideas being thrown around in the early 20th century. There were two big camps. One was called the steady state camp, which is basically the universe just exists. It's not getting bigger. It's not getting smaller. The other one was that the universe grew from a singular point, the Big Bang. So it started and has been expanding with time. But there was no experimental evidence to show which was right. And there were a couple of what we call theoretical physicists. These are people that come up with the ideas. They had thought about the expanding universe and were thinking of experiments you could do to test their idea, but they hadn't been able to actually get on and do them. Meanwhile, right, this is all in America, a couple of miles down the road, there were two scientists working with something called a radio telescope, a big dish, and they were doing something entirely different. They were looking at something entirely different in space, and they were trying to get their radio telescope to work properly. And as any scientist will tell you, it's really important when you're doing an experiment that you can distinguish an actual signal from noise, right? So noise is just the static that goes on in the background. And they couldn't get their radio telescope to give a clean signal. And at one point in the journey, they actually figured that pigeons pooing on the surface of the telescope was causing the static. Another one was the hum of radio stations from New York might be causing the static. And they worked hard and hard and hard. They couldn't get rid of the noise. And it was only when they all went to a conference, these two random camps, that the pigeon poo guys were talking to the Big Bang people, and they realized maybe you're actually detecting a signal from the Big Bang. It turns out they were. It turns out they were measuring something called the cosmic background radiation. So it's a hiss that comes from the origin of the Big Bang, and you can actually still measure it today.
So how did they rule out the pigeon poo?
So they basically would have cleaned it and as much as possible and looked at what the telescope was doing, and they also then would have let it got dirty, and measure like from pigeon poo and see was there a difference. They found there was no difference.
But they were still getting the same sound feedback.
Exactly. So, but they were able to show, and they all got the Nobel Prize for this, that they had accidentally discovered evidence for the origins of the universe.
Now, another one which is really interesting is the X-ray. Mm. And they were the unexpected side effect of an experiment on something completely different.
Yeah. So at the end of the 19th century, scientists had discovered something called the electron. That we know this now as the grounding for electronics, right? But this was completely revolutionary. And when they discovered it, a guy called J.J. Thomson, no idea as to what it might be useful for, but it was interesting to them because they're scientists. So they were doing this by building a basically something like a bulb, right? And it produced these things called cathode rays, and it glowed. It was like a neon sign. And scientists would go and do these kind of shows for the public, showing them these rays of electrons. Enter a guy called Röntgen, a German scientist, and he was interested in how these rays of electrons might pass through different materials like glass, for example. And so he set up this cathode ray tube, right? It glowed, it was giving off electrons, and he was putting pieces of glass between it and a screen. And when he did that, he noticed, he put his hand into the ray and he could see on the screen the bones within his hand. Now, to say that this would have been a surprise is a massive understatement. To that point, no one had ever been able to see inside the human body without cutting it open. He had discovered something called the X-ray. Again, had no idea as to what it might be useful for, but it perhaps is one of those things that revolutionised medicine in a way that nothing else has done.
And he didn't know, of course, what kind of harm he might be doing to himself because of the radiation.
Absolutely none. And I remember visiting Berlin a couple of years back and going into their science museum. This is the kind of thing I do on my holidays. And you can see the original X-ray. His hand and his wedding ring is evident in it.
Yeah, and you can find that online as well, can't
absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. So him and his wife were playing with these things. As you said, they had no idea as to the harmful radiation of an X-ray. But of course, it's a balance between the capacity to see into the human body, but also the harm from the X-ray mm-hmm. itself.
So you mentioned holidays there, and our next one now brings us to the importance of taking holidays and the link to a holiday and antibiotics.
Absolutely. I'm just back from a holiday myself. So I'm just wondering what scientific curiosities await when I get back to UCD. But I point to the work of Alexander Fleming in this area, famous for discovering something called the antibiotic, which we'll all have taken. So Fleming went away in his holidays and he left a petri dish with a bacteria in it. And he imagined when he came back from his holidays, the bacteria was going to have grown and grown and grown, as they do when they're left in petri dishes. Mm-hmm. A petri dish is basically a steady food source for the bacteria. So he imagined this thing would just get bigger and bigger when he was on his holidays. And he was surprised when he opened it. The legend is he was almost about to throw it in the bin, is that the bacteria hadn't grown in areas where there was a mold in the petri dish. He had discovered that mold was actually an antibiotic.
So it had prevented the growth of the bacteria.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, he had been interested in the area from the times of the First World War, where he was using things called antiseptics to try and treat bacterial infections. But he got nowhere with it. So it was completely accidental that he discovered what the term he termed it antibiotic, but he didn't have the money to do anything about it.
But he knew what he had discovered,
didn't he? But he didn't have the resource, right? He didn't have the resource to be able to follow that idea. Separately then, governments got involved and they funded massive research into the development of antibiotics. And I'd say perhaps with the exception of vaccines and a couple of alterations to food sources, nothing else has been invented or discovered that has improved the quality of human life as much as antibiotics. And it's a warning to us because at this stage, 100 years later, right, we see the worrying effects of antibiotic resistance. And I think that none of us could even imagine what it would be like to go and cut your leg on a piece of barbed wire, right, running around a farm, and that could eventually kill you.
Yeah.
And so that an antibiotic was able to transform healthcare in a massive way. So these are precious materials.
Aren't we lucky he didn't throw it in the bin when he got back off his holidays tidying up the desk? Now, research during the war then led to super glue.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and it's interesting, we often think war leads to innovation. It does, right? But the reason is that governments invest massively in science and research to give them an edge. There's nothing to say that governments who would invest in science and research in peacetime wouldn't get the same results. But we go to this chap who was looking to create transparent gun sights during the war. So you look through these sights to see your enemy so you can fire at them. And he was using a range of materials and he came across one and he was like, oh, this has potential, but it's very, very sticky. So he put it aside and
That's not what I'm looking for.
Yeah,
right,
not
now.
What I'm looking for. But perhaps him being the clever, I'll get the name for you here. It's my old chemistry teacher be angry if I didn't read it out. It's a cyanoacrylate, right? That's the name of the chemical. We know that today as superglue. So he had discovered superglue. He had put it aside because it wasn't what he was looking for. But he realized years later there was something in it, and that led to the product we would call superglue.
So he went back to his old experiment and said, I'll have another look at this sticky stuff that was useless for what I needed it for at the
exactly.
time,
yeah.
but transformative in another way.
Ideas have their day, particularly if you're clever enough to join the dots.
All right. Well, you're going to be back with us over the coming weeks to tell us more about those experiments.
Absolutely.
Shane, great to see you. Thank you very much for coming in. That's Dr. Shane Bergen from UCD. Coming up next, how to cut a hedgerow.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.